Hey, and welcome to My Opie Movies. This week we are covering the Arnold Schwarzenegger classic, Terminator 3. I saw this movie in theaters with a good friend of mine, and I will also state, I don't know who Jim Cameron was grifting money out of this time, but this movie desperately needed his careful eye. Anyway, thanks for tuning in to our season 7. I appreciate all of the support you guys have done and the tens of thousands of you who have downloaded this and listened. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and if you want to get even more of us this week, log into our Patreon. We have a special episode, of course, coming out soon. One for Mission Briefing and one on the main feed. So, thanks.
I'm host Nick Hoffman, and reference and problem panel. We have
Jeremy.
Hello, this is Daniel, and I am looking for John Connor.
Hey, author Matthew W. Quinn here. Check me out on Amazon.
So this week we are talking about a movie that all of us had seen before for once. It's been a while. This is a stone cold classic of, well, things that happened when we were in high school, I guess. High school and college.
Yep.
We all saw this in theaters, right?
Yeah, I saw this at the Tate Theater at UGA. It must have been second run.
Yeah. Do you want to mention by name the theater you saw it at?
Yeah, I saw it at the, I don't know what it's called now, but it was in Athens, like Matt, but I saw it first run at one of the movie theaters. Yeah, it was Beechwood. Yeah.
So it was in the Athens where you saw it.
Oh, God. Well, that didn't even exist yet. But.
I will say, saw it at Georgia Theater Companies, and I'm allowing them to reminisce, because remember movie theaters? Remember how we used to go see things in places with people? How I used to be able to perform comedy at one? And
How you used to make popcorn at one, too?
I did. The one that I saw Terminator 3 at. Probably the same time I was working there, actually.
Did you get free movies?
We did. And so I probably saw this for free, in fact, with a friend of the show, former regular, Mark, who now has a child at home. But he was the one I saw with, because he introduced me to Terminator and Terminator 2. And I don't know, actually we can ask, because we haven't done a Terminator before. What was the first Terminator movie you actually saw?
Terminator 2.
I saw Terminator first.
Really?
Yep.
Obviously, like, maybe you had a purist in your family who wanted to see them in order, but Terminator 2, man, that was the sleepover action, right? Like, that's why I saw Aliens more than Alien, because that's the action, like, that's what you watch when you're souped up on Surge and, donuts and bad popcorn, right?
Surge, I have not heard that name in a long time.
Dude, man, they brought back Surge and Ecto Cooler, and they are available on Amazon, and I was in fat kid heaven this time last year. I'm not gonna lie.
I saw the first Terminator because it was one of those 5-day old school rentals at the Blockbuster. Ooh.
I remember Blockbuster.
Blockbuster fucking sucked. I have no idea why anyone's nostalgic for it.
Because walking the aisles of a video store, maybe finding something you weren't looking for, is a lot more fun than Netflix.
I guess. I mean, the problem with Blockbuster was nobody knew what the hell you were looking for. But
Blockbuster was the pop station. It was the top 40 station. Near us, we also had something called Hollywood Video, which I enjoyed a little bit better. But downtown, we'll doff the
Videodrome.
Cab. Videodrome.
Videodrome's still there.
Yeah,
saying we should give them credit for still existing, man. You gotta listen to the ends of sentences.
Seriously, Videodrome, if you're ever wanting to check out any classic movies, that's where you go.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening to another movie podcast. I will mention, because they've come on our show, Eric Siska, of course.
Yes.
But when they came to Atlanta, they spent hours there just digging through the shelves, because of course you do. It's the best place in it. It really is one of those places that if you haven't been to Videodrome in Atlanta, you should go to. Anyway, so we're not talking this week on the show, we review movie theaters. I don't know why I went to Peter Lorre. It's a movie. Hey, Daniel, you want to give us a plot synopsis this time?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so this is Terminator 3.
Actually, let me try. Have you guys seen a Terminator movie before? It's that, but worse.
basically, yeah.
But instead of Michael Biehn, you have a woman who has no lines.
And scowls a lot.
Yeah, so it's like Robert Patrick, except fewer lines. But
right.
All
right,
so it's essentially Terminator 2, except this takes place on the eve of Judgment Day. So John Connor, who's now a 20-something adult, meets Claire Danes, who I don't even remember. Catherine Brewster?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Meets up with his future wife, and they try to stop Judgment Day, or at least that's their mission, whereas Terminator 2 is happening in the background, by which I mean Arnold Schwarzenegger's back in this movie as the T-800, even though, yeah, fucking hell, we'll get to that bit. Even though he's there and another futuristic Terminator, TX.
Yeah.
TX. Which yeah. is credited as the Terminatrix, though I don't think anyone says it.
In the movie, they
John
say
John Connor
it
says it once. I'd forgotten the name, but yeah, the Terminatrix is after both of them while they're trying to stop Judgment Day.
And meanwhile, we meet some of John Connor's future lieutenants who she slags before she figures out John Connor's available.
Because apparently John Connor only pulled from the greater LA area.
Now, I'm going to go ahead and say this.
Go ahead. Be so bold.
Terminator 2 needed a sequel in order to round the franchise out. Because the way it ended meant that essentially John Connor didn't exist.
Well, right? He shouldn't have existed at all because Kyle Reese is his father, and the only way Kyle Reese would have come back.
They needed something to explain that, Jeremy, and we eventually got that sequel in a Fox TV show called Terminator the Sarah Connor Chronicles that lasted 2 seasons, and that's how I know who Lena Headey is, but god damn, this movie doesn't need to exist.
I thought it was pretty fun.
So we should get into this a little bit. This guy, this movie is directed by a guy named Jonathan Marsteau.
What was that sub-movie? U-571?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was pretty good,
I
thought.
I was going to say, he's from Stay Tuned, U-571, which is
yeah.
a movie which is nonsense. Because it was a real historical event done completely by the British.
By the British,
so
we steal
their history in order to make us look better. And from the, also, I think, Stay Tuned movie, Surrogates. Which
he did Surrogate?
2009 Surrogates.
The Bruce Willis.
Yep, and Ving Rhames. Yeah.
Hell. Is,
again, a weird movie, which we'll talk about at one point. This is also a movie lacking any really good actors. I think Claire Danes is literally a woman in the fridge for half this movie as she's locked in the back of a truck, kicking and screaming.
Well, she does a really good job acting like an angry wet cat, which realistically she probably would be when all this nonsense is happening.
But give her
now, Claire Danes is a great actor, but she's just giving nothing to do.
Well, I mean, and the worst of it is that you put this movie in the capable hands of Nick Stahl, who is quite possibly one of the least charismatic actors. I mean, he looks like he's off the set of Beverly Hills 90210 this entire movie, which is not who you need for our action hero. And B, he's terrible. He just complains this whole movie. He's truly remarkably
well.
Bad.
That's well, what Eddie Furlong was doing in the second Terminator.
Well, I think this is this movie is kind of how he becomes John Connor and she becomes Kate Brewster. You know,
get an actor, get anyone.
Well,
he's
because,
so bad in this
because she's like a veterinarian and he's like a hobo working construction. And by the end of it, she's shredding robots with a machine gun and he's commanding, well, trying to command.
I am not
soldiers.
Talking about his character. I am talking about the actor. And you know where he was best used? In Sin City. Because he doesn't have any lines! He's the yellow bastard!
Oh,
that's him?
Right, yes.
He
yes,
has
that
no
is.
Lines! He's just a rapist of children and says nothing! And then Bruce Willis shoots him repeatedly.
Recognize my voice? Recognize my voice, you piece of shit Terminator? I know I look different, but you'll recognize my voice!
By the way, that is a Stay Tuned and a Half. That movie is...
I fucking love Sin City.
Elijah Wood is a ninja cannibal. Who'd have thought of that?
I've read the comics. I've seen the first movie. The second movie was crap, but...
The second movie was garbage.
It
was a chance to have nudity in, like, that weird negative color thing they did.
Well, I mean, that's how we got to saw Vesper Lynn make naked, so hey.
I mean, it's true. We sure did. Is that the best Frank Miller movie?
What, Sin City?
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah. I think it was better than 300, because 300 in the battle scenes wasn't that much.
I will guarantee you, this season we will do 300.
Aww.
We're going to get our 300th episode. I don't think it will be our 300th episode, because that's a little
on the nose. That movie gave me such a headache. I don't want to do that again.
But it has everyone's favorite Scottish man pretending to be Greek.
Mel Gibson?
That's not even a joke. You're fine. But yeah, no, it's one of the most xenophobic movies I've ever seen, so let's do it. Oh. Why not? But yeah. Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. Frank Miller wrote the screenplay for RoboCop 2.
And yep. 3,
and
yes.
And 3. And RoboCop versus the Terminator, a comic book series.
Sad. I've actually read the comic that was based on his original script for RoboCop 2.
Yeah.
So much worse than RoboCop 2.
Another stay tuned. He wrote the screenplay for The Spirit.
I never saw that.
That's bad. That's real bad.
That is.
That's real, real bad. What's the one with Alec Baldwin?
The Shadow. I want to do The Shadow. I remember liking The Shadow.
Yeah, we might do The Shadow soon, too. Anyway, so we're back to a movie that we don't want to talk about because it's not good.
I would dispute that.
Okay, then you talk about
it. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, we start out with our friend John Connor, who's living like a hobo off the grid because he's afraid Judgment Day will happen anyway. And then he gets in a motorcycle accident and rips himself up real bad, so he breaks into the nearest medical facility, which is a veterinarian's office, where he downs a bunch of animal tranquilizers and starts operating on himself.
Now, here's the thing about the Terminator movies. This is all revolving around Sarah Connor.
Who's dead.
At this point she is, but that's the mistake that this movie makes. We needed her.
We need any female characters to have more than 3 lives. But... I mean, something that Jim Cameron does very well is strong female protagonists. For example, in The Abyss, it's a CGI liquid monster. In Avatar, it's Blue Nonsense. And
and in Titanic, it's Leo.
It's the ship. Yeah. Because ships are women.
And meanwhile, the vet tech, Kate Brewster, gets a phone call that someone has broken. Well, the phone call is that someone wants to get her cat looked at. And she goes to the vet tech and finds him passed out on the floor.
Wait, we have to first get to the fact that her cold open is great. She is setting up a wedding registry with her fiancé, Dead Meat, whose name I couldn't even tell you.
Scott.
He's like wearing like a sport coat, and she calls her dad, and her dad's like, "Well, I'm going to miss meeting your husband until we're literally at the wedding. Bye!" And they're trying to scan like a decorative pot.
Who's her husband? Who's that actor? Because we all thought it was Dead Cyclops Meat. From X-Men.
Well, you thought it was Cyclops. I thought it was Breckenmeyer. It turned out it was neither of them. It was someone who doesn't exist.
Doesn't have his own IMDb page?
Dude, he does. I'm stalling for time.
Yeah, he does.
His name is Mark Famiglietti. I'm not from the Bronx, so I'm not going to get this right. Mark Famiglietti. Or Famiglietti? Whatever. He's in 3 things. His screenshot is from this. He's in something called Secret in Their Eyes, Flash Forward, and Premonition. I've not seen anything else he's in. Oh, that's not true. He's in Aquarius, which I watched because of David Duchovny. And
Right.
Most decidedly not.
Yeah, that NBC show where Duchovny was after Charles Manson.
Yeah. David Duchovny has the head of an FBI agent, and that's what I've learned. Speaking of... He would have been better in this than that guy. Put David Duchovny in a movie. He could be
an attractive David Duchovny the Terminator. Why the hell not?
Well, I mean, that's why the second one kind of worked. Robert Patrick's a little dude, and the idea that he would throw Arnold across the room works. Give me someone.
Well, I want to turn this over to Jeremy because I know Terminator 2 is one of his favorites. Why is that one of your favorites? Not trying to challenge you.
Fuck you, guy.
Yeah, fuck you for thinking that's the best, one of your best movies. But
yeah.
Why is that one of your favorites, and why is that so much different from this movie?
Why is it one of your favorite movies, and why are you wrong?
Well, I think, first off, James Cameron's one of the greatest filmmakers ever. Yeah, I said it. He's brilliant.
Without fault?
Oh God,
Avatar
no! Yes,
Avatar 4 is going to be. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, see,
I really like some of the movies that he has that exist.
That's already. That's the thing with James Cameron is you look at one of his movies and you say, why does that need a sequel? Then the sequel comes out and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
So Titanic 2 then.
That's one of the best Simpsons bits. Yeah. Look out, the ship's behind you.
Sorry.
Titanic 2, Leonardo's frozen corpse.
That's one of the best Rick and Morty bits where the maid kidnaps Jerry.
Don't paint me naked. You're just like, what am I watching? But sorry, Jeremy, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, when he makes a movie, it's because he knows exactly what he wants. Yeah, he's an expert craftsman, and he puts his attention to detail into every single thing.
And I will say that First Terminator is one of the greatest horror movies ever made.
Mm-hmm.
What he usually wants isn't that good.
I disagree. I'm with Jeremy on this one. I really do like Jim Cameron. I think, unfortunately, right now, he has more of an ego than a movie in mind for the next three Avatar movies. I mean, I could be wrong. They could be great. Tragically, that first one came out 15 years ago, and I couldn't be bothered to care anymore.
It was a terrible...
It wasn't a terrible movie. It was
visually, it was a great movie. Technically, it was a great movie. From the point of its view of its script... Terrible.
Well, you can say the same exact thing about Gravity.
That movie made me empathize with cat people when they're seeing their tree burn and they're crying, and I felt so sorry for them.
I felt the same way when I saw cat people. But I will say.
So tell us more about FurryCon,
out the
Nick.
Fire.
There's two.
With gasoline.
Cat people. Which maybe is taking the original French one is too good to do, but that remake from the 80s, which is
Malcolm McDowell and
yes. There's not enough Malcolm McDowell in this podcast yet. I said that on Star Trek. Listen to the Patreon if you want to hear us talk about Star Trek. But that he's in Generations and he's building a ray gun to blow up a planet so that the Nexus will take him. And no, we will not be doing Clockwork Orange anytime soon.
Are we going to do Tank Girl?
Oh god,
do I have to? No.
Well, Malcolm McDowell.
McDowell. No, you're right. As a Malcolm McDowell completist, I guess I have to.
That guy's been in over 200 movies, like.
Okay. Can you imagine being like a Frank Welker completist? You'd be dead.
Yeah.
You'd be dead.
Yep.
He has golden everything. Anyway, so this movie.
All right.
Nick
so...
Stahl is patching himself up in Claire Forlani. No, sorry.
Claire Danes.
There's two things that happen. First off, this is the exact same thing that happens in Terminator 2. We get the time travel Terminators back. Arnold Schwarzenegger apparently manifests outside of a male strip club and steals the clothes of a male stripper.
Who is so hilarious.
This is that close to a joke that doesn't work anymore. There are no gay slurs thrown out there,
no.
But it's close.
It's very it's much a very gay close. Stereotype. And... the Terminatrix shows up and I don't know ends
I mean,
up in this
up
red leather suit.
In like the window of a Beverly Hills whatever. And also this time, which is different from the other movies, unless I'm wrong, they show up in like literal glass spheres.
Yeah,
like,
that's happened in
So the time bubble was solid in the first two?
Yes.
I don't think it was, but regardless.
It was meant to be, at the very least. That's visually what we understood was happening.
We then get the one line said by the actress who plays the Terminatrix, nice car, as Nick...
Excuse you, Nick. It's, I like your car.
And then she murders the woman and steals her leather bondage outfit. It's essentially she's wearing what Arnold wears, which is a leather biker outfit, but she's just driving a Lexus, and it's like... that burgundy red that existed in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Now, this is all about defending our childhood. And I remember having this on DVD, listening to the commentary and hearing Arnold Schwarzenegger say, you know, it would be so much better if women could just grow their breasts like that.
We have to explain the scene now.
Distracting a cop to get his gun.
She gets pulled over after stealing... that Beverly Hills mom's car. To distract him, she inflates her boobs.
So I'm kind of wondering, so Skynet created its Terminator killer Terminator to have an inflatable bust line.
Yeah.
As someone who has recently developed breasts due to gaining 20 pounds during COVID, I can tell you they make you less aerodynamic. And I imagine going through time, you want to be as aerodynamic as possible.
I know you can't don't have clothes.
What bra are you using there, Nick?
Why? I'm wearing only the finest material. God damn it. I'm losing weight, which you can tell by the fact that I'm drinking as much as I am tonight.
Tonight?
Did you know that Slim Fast mixes very well with... I'm done. And after growing her bosoms for the camera...
Three sizes that day.
Well done. You broke the podcast for a minute. That was good. Also, I will say, to what end? Because all she does is immediately...
The strength of 10 bus lines plus 2.
She hacks the school district, because at this point, all the future leaders of resistance are in high school, and starts finding their addresses where they're working and starts putting holes in them.
You know, I already mentioned the Sarah Connor Chronicles, where they address this specifically. It's Terminators going back into the 30s. To get specific materials that they'll need in the future. There are scenes where, like you said, Nick, where they're talking about meeting teenage lieutenants. It was handled so much better on that show.
Well, but didn't that show come out like half a decade later?
Like, this 2008, 2009.
Yeah, half a decade. I think part of it is someone watched this movie and said, this was way overthought. Because, I mean, again... What is The Terminator other than a fun action movie? The first one, it's just like, man, what if Michael Myers came from the future? And, I mean, because that's what it is, effectively. And then all of this nonsense built up around it, which is fine. Like, everyone likes the backstory. But the problem is, I think more than anything, this movie is trying to remake the second one in the worst way possible. Mm-hmm. It doesn't add anything. She's essentially got liquid metal. She has less lines than Robert Patrick.
Plot-wise, if you get rid of her, no difference.
Then what is the Terminator Arnold trying to protect them from if she's not in it?
Frankly, interestingly enough, it doesn't matter because she's not even trying to kill John Connor, right?
Until she finds him because he was like licking the bandage on the floor.
Oh, let's
by
get
the way,
to that
what
scene.
Nonsense is that? There she is sucking off a Band-Aid and we're just like, alrighty, let me just dip this in people.
She starts having an orgasm when she...
Oh, she does. Yeah. She lights up like a Christmas tree. That's weird. Also, by the way, I kind of like in the first Terminator that he just steals a page from the Yellow Pages is like, and just try to kill everyone named Sarah Connor. How much better is that? Like, because then it's Michael Myers, man. It's an indiscriminate killer. Is your name John O'Connor? What? Pow! Like, that's a better movie, man. An unstoppable killing machine.
Well, apparently the whole reason of her existence is that Claire Danes is in this movie, and she's supposed to be John Connor's wife.
Well,
this is the world's most violent meet cute.
So we got Nick Stoll, he's patched himself up. Claire Danes, I keep wanting to say Claire Forlani, it's the 90s thing. Although this woman can speak into the realistic American accent. Her dad is in charge of Skynet, which is real awkward. Can you imagine, like, if your wife was, like, the creator of the thing that's going to kill all of humanity? I mean, it doesn't stop him from having kids. But.
Well, that's what happened in T2, though, with Miles Davis.
Miles Dyson.
Dyson.
Oh, my God.
He's singing sweet jazz while blowing things up.
Yes.
But, I mean, I love that scene where Arnold's just in their, like, kitchen having coffee, and he's like, okie dokie, and he pulls off his skin, and you're like, shit, that's something. The second movie I didn't do for a rewatch, I'll be honest. I think I own it on 4K. I need to rewatch it.
It looks better than films 30
years
later. Yeah,
so she catches him.
Sure.
And
I don't doubt it.
She catches him and locks him in a dog cage after remembering that they made out in some guy's basement in middle school.
What's going on here is John Connor is taking a whole bunch of odd jobs to survive, right?
Yeah.
And he breaks into a vet and steals medicine so he can relieve pain after a motorcycle crash.
His motorcycle beef. This is where he meets Claire Danes, and this is where the Terminatrix first shows up. She half destroys it, including killing a cat lady who's there because her cat Hercules has a cough. which she is convinced is COVID, I mean pneumonia. And then she gets shot to shit, and after, like, fingering the wound and licking it off, she goes,
yeah, because she's after Kate Brewster.
Yeah, and at this point, our hero, ladies and gentlemen, is locked in a dog cage, which he is trying to break out of like he's done in a way that makes you think he's done it before.
Next time, get a clue, not a paintball gun.
Gross. And, by the by, the only shot we have of the future in this one is John Connor's future dreams, which is weird. But also, a scene in which, for those of you in the audience who don't know, generally we watch one on our own and watch one together. This one we watched together, and my God, he was sitting on the edge of a bridge somewhere in LA, known for its bridges, and he's drinking a Bud Heavy, and he drops it into the water, and it lands on a bunch of skulls, and you're just like, oh, it's this movie. Oh, here we are.
Now...
And I just wanted to be in that pitch meeting. All right, Anheuser-Busch, we know you want to sponsor our movie, but let me paint a picture. You know how Skull Beach is there? Your glass bottles won't, you know, break down with nature for thousands of years. So Skull Beach, how about it?
And then we see him with a stubble and an American flag making a speech on top of a fallen hunter killer. America, F yeah.
We're by the way, because of how tiny this man is, Nick Stahl, he looks like one of the hobbits giving a speech. Like, my God, like, you have a tattered American flag, which is good because the strip club where Arnold shows up has a lot of Confederate flags, so I'm glad the American flag eventually shows up in this film.
Wait, it's a strip club with a lot of Confederate flags with a gay stripper?
It sure is. And Elton John glasses in his breast pocket. There's a lot going on in that scene.
It's a scene from T2 when he breaks into the biker club.
But, no, we don't see anyone's ass really get kicked. Like, in the second one, when he throws that guy's head on the grill, that's awesome. Here, all he does is, like, grab a man's hand and forces him to get naked, which the ladies love.
Oh, yeah, when he climbs up onto the stage naked, they all start screaming their heads off.
By the way, in case you were curious, at the time, when he was Mr. Universe, Arnold Schwarzenegger was the highest paid male nude in human history. He got $2 million to pose nude in a magazine.
Go on.
Looking good. Looking good. Someone's doing some quick Googling in the corner there. Anyway.
After all that, where the Terminator meets John Connor, there's that huge car chase that's supposed to be like the big Mack truck in the second one, right?
Yeah, it goes on for about twice as long as it needs to.
Which is two things. First of all, proving again they're remaking the second movie, but it's also showing off her one new piece of technology, which is a whole bunch of sci-fi nonsense words, but effectively she has nanobots that can take over other machines.
Right.
And because all the other cars, including police cars and fire trucks and ambulances, all the cars that are chasing, you know, John Connor and Claire Danes are empty. And only the Terminatrix is in this weird, it's essentially a pulley truck. Right.
Yeah.
It's a lift truck. It's with a cherry picker on the back. And everything else is empty, which, again... This is the one thing this movie really gets right, which is real explosions and a lot of good stunt drivers, mm-hmm. right? Because it's real cars really smashing. It's practically a Blues Brothers movie. And if you put Yakety Sax to it, you have the comedy which this movie wants to be.
That would have made this movie so much better if Arnold Schwarzenegger was dangling off the crane. Get down!
But, I mean, and then Arnold finally shows up. He starts... like, knocking the shit out of things. He knocks John Connor, gets over, you can't drive! And, then you got yourself a movie.
Meanwhile, they're both trying to convince Kate that he really is a robot from the future and that John Connor is a savior of mankind.
And that her dad is going to kill mankind.
And we now have to introduce some nonsense. Just like Doctor Who, the Terminator has two hearts. And they're both radioactive nuclear cores. And he then takes this, like, Leatherman.
He cuts out his own heart.
if I only had a brain. He removes his heart, and it explodes in a nuclear blast in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
Yeah, it is a literal nuclear explosion out in the desert somewhere.
We were somewhere past Barstow at the end of the desert.
When the nuclear blast...
when the Terminator began to take hold, I remember saying something like, do you think the Terminatrix is coming, when a mushroom cloud came over the horizon?
We can't stop here. This is Terminatrix country.
And he's totally cool. Meanwhile, Claire Danes is in the back with what I presume is emergency, like, everything, right?
He basically pillages a gas station, and when the attendant tells him to pay, he's like, talk to the hand.
Oh, God. Of all the catchphrases he picks up, he might as well lower his glasses and says, if you want to be my lover. Like, he's talk to the hand in 2003. My God, he might as well be doing the Macarena. Like, are you kidding me? The thing is, Hasta La Vista was nothing before the Terminator. It's not something that appeared in a Run-DMC music video, right? Like, Talk to the Hand is something that sassy black women played when they were talking to Tim Allen in Home Improvement. Like, this is nonsense. He might as well have said, I don't know. Like, he might as well have been quoting an Inconvenient Truth. Like, I this is all awful. Luckily, they gave...
A lot of this stuff was funny, but for the wrong reasons.
Yes. Thank you, Matt. Mr. Quinn, you have been on my podcast since the beginning. Sometimes I'm afraid you'll find things that are bad funny. You've got this one. You've got this one down pat. This is a swing and a miss every time. Although, of course, as someone...
I'm just so glad it exists, though, because that's the only way the franchise works.
Right, because without this one, how will we get Christian Bale yelling at a light guy and threatening him in the next one?
Exactly.
That's right.
Could have used some more Guns N' Roses songs, I'm just saying.
I mean, how are we going to have fat Chris Hardwick without this movie? And I do have a place in my soft fat man heart for Chris Hardwick, because when I first listened to podcasts, the Nerdist is one everyone listened to, because much like herpes, everyone got touched by it. However, Chris Hardwick in this man is just a pudgy guy who can barely breathe. He's trying to walk pace with the guy who plays the dad, who's, you know, accidentally trying to not release Skynet on the world, but totally going to release Skynet on the world. And he's like, but, at least in a house of 1,000 corpses, he doesn't have to walk. He's sitting down the whole time. That was only
now,
for Jeremy.
We've been over what happens in the first act. The two Terminators come back. What's going on in the rest of the movie? Jeremy?
Well, who cares?
I mean, honestly, what's going on in the rest of the movie, which is only important because it's... I mean, if this movie was well-directed, it would matter much more. Mm-hmm. But there's a computer virus which has taken over the world, which in 2003 there were a couple, including one called Blaster Worm, which was essentially at my freshman year of college, which really did take over the world for a while and shut down several government programs because it was an attachment to an email that then sent out 1,000 other emails and blah, 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 blah. That's how viruses work. And we get this, like, messages throughout, like when that scene when Matt mentioned a minute ago, where they end up at, like, a Quickie Mart in AMPM, for those of you on the West Coast specifically, all the TV stations are out. When Claire Danes tries to call 911, the network drops. And
who needs the Quickie Mart? Arnold does.
We do. We do.
We do.
Griffin, get us on your podcast. But... everything is going down on and off, and we're told by a very professional looking man with a beard, we'll call him Dennis Nedry.
God.
I don't think we ever get his name, actually, but he's Beardy Man, the first. That everything's going down, like half of the civilian internet is down, they say, and
That's real weird how they introduce that. I mean, what would have been so much better is if John Connor was, like, trying to log on to AOL and kept failing.
He's trying to go to keyword transient, and it's just not working. What I was going to say, actually, something the first Terminator does very well is the old newsreel footage, right? Like, two people today named Sarah Connor were killed, and, like, they go back to the kitchen, and Sarah Connor's waitress friend goes, honey, you're dead. That's all you need. It's 2003. You cut to CNN, you cut to Fox, you cut to MSNBC, and they're just like, the liberals are releasing a computer virus. And then you got a story. You know, you got Dick Cheney out there, like, having a heart attack. You got George W. Bush looking at an Etch-a-Sketch and saying the internet's down. Like, you don't need all this nonsense where you're cutting to a map of the United States and there's a bunch of yellow triangles. Like, I get, like, it's not a hard story. They try to log on to XM or Sirius Radio, and all of a sudden Howard Stern doesn't exist anymore. The horror. Who's going to ride the Sibian?
That's not Howard Stern. That's Skynet impersonating Howard Stern.
My God, the regular guys are being kicked off Atlanta Radio again. This is for locals only. But anyway. At this point, there's a lot of nonsense. They go to Sarah Connor's grave. Turns out she's not buried. It's a bunch of guns. Her ashes were scattered in Mexico because she didn't want to do this movie.
And Dr. Silberman is back and has his worst nightmare come true.
So I read some IMDb trivia on this, by the
best way. Best part of that movie.
It's a good joke. It's a good laugh-em-up. Everyone shows up at this, what do you call it?
A cemetery?
Well, no, but specifically like a crematory.
Crypt.
A crypt. Okay, fine. We'll use crypt. But when there's like a bunch of things in the wall. There's a bunch of like cremation, like vases and like embedded in it. Turns out she has a coffin filled with guns. Anyway.
Just in case.
Well, I mean, you can never be prepared. I'm going to be buried with a dime on each eye and a Glock in case I have to fight the devil. I've seen Doom. But anyway.
Well, Terminatrix kills Kate's fiancé and assumes his identity.
I read the IMDb trivia on this, and apparently the director filmed the apocalypse at the end with more people involved. And so we would see cities and people, like, shredding away, including that fucking psychiatrist finally getting his due as a mushroom cloud melts him away. Which, frankly, if anyone in this trilogy deserves it, it's him for telling everyone that they're making it up. He witnessed a monsterman enter the police station in that first one.
Well, he left right before the original Terminator arrived. It was the second one when he finally realized it was real.
Well, right. But for two movies, he's been telling the protagonist that this is nonsense. If anyone deserves a justifiable death, it's that bald fucker. And you know what? In this one, he's like, it's practically a scene. What's that Dustin Hoffman movie? Is it Safe?
Oh, Marathon Man.
It's practically a scene out of Marathon Man where he recognizes the guy from the concentration camp, right? Like, he's like, and he starts running, and you're just like, you run, old man, but you're not going to get away.
So this movie is not safe.
Just let that air out.
Is it safe?
You gotta let that joke breathe a little bit. You gotta get some air in that joke. I will say, when the dentist drill sound started going in with the Terminatrix, every time, man, every time. It's funny. That's one of those illusions that I hadn't watched until, at this point, it's been almost a decade. Anyway, well, at this point, it's just an action sequence. I mean, we're speeding towards the end.
Well, the entire thing is Terminator 2, except for a couple plot points, one of which is Claire Danes' dad.
Yeah, Claire Danes' dad, who's in charge of the military internet?
Autonomous weapon systems. Like, you see the hunter killers, you see the tanks. Well, he's got all the robot machines.
But the question is, why is he also concerned about this civilian virus?
Because I think they wanted to use Skynet to destroy the virus.
Well, they do. And ultimately, that's why he's important. But, like,
yeah, but why didn't they just call Comcast instead of the military?
Why don't they call John McAfee, who's somewhere in a rainforest masturbating over some corpse, and he's like, I can solve your virus.
Oh, that's why he's hiding out in South America. McAfee is John Connor.
Dun, dun, dun. But, by the way, better sixth movie than whatever that nonsense that came out this year was, or last year was.
Well, yeah, they shoot John Connor in the head in the first 5 minutes of the movie, so what was the point?
There he is in the back corner drinking, like, consuming peyote, however you do, and he's like, I have something in the bottom of this hammock that will solve Skynet. Is this? And he just holds up some nonsense, and that's John McAfee, who I think is hiding from a murder beef. I don't know what's going on with him. So McAfee, antivirus.
Maybe McAfee is the Terminator.
One that must be damaged somehow because he's not acting like a rational machine.
At this point, the Terminatrix penetrates Arnold, which is something he's wanted for years.
Did we get to a
big plot twist in this where we learn where Schwarzenegger came from, whereas...
Oh, right! By the way, Claire Danes was the one who sent this particular Arnold bot back from the future.
That was a different T-101, which, fuck you, that's not the
first
canon,
of all, of course, fuck you, it's obvious, because the T-101 that he sent back died.
Excuse me, it keeps dying. The T-800
kept dying, right? If I recall correctly, he died like John Carroll Lynch in Volcano and just gave a thumbs up as he got crushed to death. Yep. By the way, one of cinema's greatest deaths.
That is a great scene, yeah.
Yeah, and the big reveal that Kate is John's future wife who sent the Terminator that killed her husband back to save him.
She's your wife. Word.
And we have the best line ever. Why, when John is like, how in the hell is she my future wife? Like, why? Why not? She is a healthy female of breeding age.
That is indeed a line in this movie.
That's what I told my wife. You know, we met in college, and I looked at you, and you're like, you look like a attractive female of breeding age.
Did you get maced?
First, I'm sure he did.
I got clarinetted right to the face.
Well, I maced Nick the first day I met him, so...
Well, I did make a move.
I know.
We bonded over Independence Day, and then he maced me.
So we have this whole... And it turns out that the Terminator doesn't have to listen to John Connor. He has to obey the orders of Kate Brewster. So Kate Brewster wants to save her dad. So off they go to the military-industrial complex dungeon.
Yeah. Somewhere in Silicon Valley.
Oliver Stone just got a massive hard-on when you said that.
That's right.
Well, they have a line in there where they try and get him to go along with some questionable plan, but like, you'll get all the funding you'll possibly want.
Yeah. And by, like, this is like this weird nonsense, like, so the whatever this mystery virus is, which turned out to be Skynet.exe/puffies or whatever it is that people keep clicking on.
Skynet's a Nigerian prince, people.
Right. If you forward this Skynet virus onto 10 other people, or you get cursed for all eternity. Again, this is 2003, man. At this point, all I was trying to do was, like, download Eagle Eyed Cherry Save Tonight, which we've mentioned, I think, on the Hackers? No. Was it Hackers?
It was later than that, because that inspired me to actually go and buy it on iTunes.
Well, no. What was I almost said erotic thriller. Cyber thriller we did. Was it Hacker? We did Hackers.
We did Hackers. That was a while ago.
It was, we at that point, I expressed that my first AOL screen name was Game Dude 3, and the first MP3 I downloaded was Eagle Eye Cherry Save Tonight.
Now, I always assumed your initial screen name was Chilbro Chad.
By the way, when I was in college, as we've mentioned before, I was a film minor then. And half of those DVDs, of course, are still on the shelf here for those of you, of course, who are in my room. But, like, we're talking about a copy of Reservoir Dogs I've brought to at least 5 places I've lived. Clerks. I had the entire, at that point, Kevin Smith, everything. I mean, Dogma, I don't think is a Stay Tuned, but, oh, we could watch my DVD copy.
Yeah, so... Meanwhile, while our heroes and heroine are on their way to the AI lab, the Terminatrix has infiltrated the AI lab as well, and then she finds a bunch of the war machines and starts activating them. And I thought it'd be funny if she just looks at one as like, Grandpa?
Well, and she also disguises herself as Claire Danes' character, Catherine, or Kate Brewster, so that the dad is like, Daddy!
Well,
and then
the Arnold
shoots
her dad.
Well, but first, she tries to stop the dad from starting Skynet for some reason, which makes no sense.
I don't think she does.
Doesn't she run up and bang on the glass and say no to him?
No, she tries to yell to him, but that was the guy I figured was to get his attention. And then Arnold shoots her, and then you see her again.
Because this is where the movie's nonsense really kicks into high gear. Because sometimes she recognizes people and sometimes she doesn't. I assume it's she yells out, Dad, stop, to make her dad look up. But if you run into a room of adults and you yell, Dad, stop, everyone is going to look up. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, anyway, and then she shoots, you know, Grandpa Skynet 6 times in the chest.
Yeah, because he was on the kill list too.
Yep. Everyone is on this kill list for some reason. Which, by the way, is all not...
time loop.
Well, maybe he was involved in the resistance against the machine somehow.
First of all, with any time travel movie, just don't think about it. One of my favorite movies of all time is Back to the Future. I've watched it 1,000 times. Just don't think about it. Just assume that everyone is attracted to his mom, because guess what? At that age, she's a beautiful woman. Everyone would be just attracted to her. Also, Michael J. Fox. You could just totally be attracted to Michael J. Fox. I mean...
Have you, in Austin Powers 2, they have Austin try and figure out time travel. He's like, oh, now I've gone cross-eyed.
Just don't think about it. Terminator 2. Just don't think about it. You know what? If you show up to Terminator 2 to worry about space-time, you miss the point of the movie. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say you're wrong. I love Terminator 2. Also, Alien 7, the re-summoning.
What's in the box, Ripley? What's in the box?
You didn't miss a beat. Well done. Okay, so we have a shootout at whatever this NORAD nonsense base is, somewhere in the middle of L.A. And everyone dies, including fat Chris Hardwick, who, again, love Chris Hardwick. Fat here. Fat and sad. He looks just sad this whole time.
Yeah. And
why are you looking at me when you say that?
Because you're none of those things. You're not sad, and you're not Chris Hardwick.
Well, there you go.
And so, meanwhile...
Back at the ranch.
General Brewster is lung shot, but he still survives long enough to... Because he's not immediately dead, he's got blood in his mouth, so I'm assuming that's where it hit.
That's right,
And so, he helps them find the codes to what they think.
Like a Victorian novel... He coughs into a handkerchief and there's blood, so you know he's going to die soon.
And so he has the code. So he gives them the codes to how to get to the to this bunker.
In Crystal Peak.
Yeah, Crystal Peak, where
Crystal
John
Peak
thinks that's where the Skynet brain is.
Location 56 miles northwest of here.
We haven't done enough Arnold impersonations. So here I am on, you know, AM afternoons, and I'm telling you this, the robots are coming. The robots are coming!
And meanwhile, Arnold and the Terminatrix just have a bathroom brawl where they beat, right, involving gratuitous toilet beatdowns.
Nothing says the men are going to win.
TP.
Nothing says the men are going to win quite like beating a woman to death with a urinal. But it almost happens. It almost happens. She should have come back with a tampon dispenser. It would have balanced things out just a skosh. I mean, and I only say that because. There are exactly 2 women in this entire movie. There aren't even women who are working in the office other than the Terminatrix pretending to be one of the employees. There's no women in this entire movie!
Why pass the Bechdel test? Have, like, Kate Brewster and the Terminatrix have a catfight or something?
All the women in this movie are in the strip club expecting to see naked men. The Terminatrix has one line. Like, it's really one of the more sexist movies we've done. It's shocking. And by the way,
what about that old cat lady?
Yeah, don't forget the cat lady.
She's shot to death. I mean, you're right. She has a scene.
No.
This movie passes
And it passes the Bechdel test because she only talks about her cat. Hercules.
Yeah, but her cat, Hercules, who is a guy.
Who's a man.
Yeah.
They talk about a man.
Yep.
They're not a human man, and they're not wanting to date him, hopefully.
Fair. I don't know, she's a cat lady.
Oh my.
But I will say, this movie is like 1 hour 45. It takes 1 hour 20 before Claire Danes picks up a gun and shoots anything. And again, I'll give credence to this podcast. Daniel and I are arguing about it, but overall it's well done. It's called Blockbuster. But like one of the things Arnold did before he did the first Terminator is take like 4 weeks of gun training. Claire Danes needed to take gun training because she picks up the gun in a way that doesn't work. Like, she holds out a semi-automatic gun like this, like about a foot away from her. That's not how you do it. It kicks.
Yeah, unless you want to lose some teeth.
Right. That's why Sarah Connor, Sigourney Weaver, like, they're badasses. I believe when they pick up a gun, they know how to use it. Claire Danes is here in heels. Everything you said about Jurassic World, where Bryce Dallas Howard is running around in heels, applies to this movie. Because it's not like she's wearing high heels, but she's wearing heels. and she fights a Terminator. You know what she doesn't need to do? Fight a Terminator. She shows up to her vet clinic at 4 in the morning to help this cat lady wearing heels. You know what you do when you show up to work at 4 in the morning? You wear sneakers. You wear your most basic, comfortable sneakers, and you don't throw on a comfortable jacket. You wear a sweatshirt, man. She should be in this with a V-neck or a tank top and a sweatshirt, wearing sneakers. At least then it makes sense, but she's running away from a fucking Terminator.
And then decides to turn the tables on it and shred it with a submachine gun.
And it's weird because she's not trying to be sexy in this movie. This isn't like she's out to dinner with her fiancé and then the Terminator shows up. It's 4 the fucking morning! Let her be in comfortable clothes! Because, by the way, Nick Stahl, here's our quote-unquote hero, is dressed like a hobo the whole movie. He's wearing a shitty t-shirt. He's dressed like a fat guy podcaster like all of us are! He might as well then
hey,
stop
speak
and
for yourself.
Visit. I am. I literally was. R2-D2 is on my t-shirt right now. It says, slow your roll. I'm not pretending to be anything I'm not. Technically, I'm wearing sweatpants short right now.
Mm.
From Target. You're welcome, America.
Well, you managed to tie the drawstring on those pants, so hey.
That's right. It hugs my question mark curve. It's one of those, like, Latin American, like, where there's a question mark at the beginning and the end, curves.
Yeah, and so, our hero and heroine make it to Crystal Peak, but guess after using the electromagnetic collider thingy to temporarily disable...
Melt her
to the thing, but and then fight off the infested good Terminator, whose, like, head is still free-willed, but the body is trying to kill John Connor.
Yeah. Yep. So, that requires a little bit of explanation. Terminatrix infests Arnold, so now he's trying to kill them, but his CPU is intact, so he's telling him to go on. And Terminatrix is stuck to a proton accelerator.
Yeah.
Which for some reason exists where they're doing every other experiment in the world.
I guess.
And at this point...
This is Skunk Works, I guess.
Well, and the other thing, of course, which is important to mention at this point, her dad has decided to use Skynet to fight the virus, which we didn't mention.
Yep. Oh,
but it turns out Skynet was the virus.
We did. We mentioned the virus.
Okay.
And Skynet, as Matt said, is the virus and is taking over everything. For some reason, in scene deleted, Arnold said that Judgment Day will take place at 6:18, and that's when it happens.
The same day that the third act happens, apparently.
I mean, I will say, when I saw this in 2003, as I was graduating from high school, and about literally, this may have been the last thing I did before I quit my movie theater job, because I did my entire senior year, and then I quit the damn thing, because that's what you do. This ending stuck with me, because it's a freaking good ending. They end up in this bomb... Well, it's like a bomb shelter.
It's the National Command Center backup because you have a TV camera on the Great Seal of the President. So that's what they're going to be broadcasting from in the event of a war.
Which, by the way, because our current president sells it, you can buy a copy on Trump.com of the Great Seal of the United States. And you can buy it on golf tees. So there you go, because that's where we are in America. But on the wall, you have all... like. It's really cool. It looks like a scene we kept saying out of GoldenEye. We have a scene out of GoldenEye here where, out of nowhere, the world ends. Like, they end up locked in this room. Terminator uses his second heart, blows up the Terminatrix, and we have the apocalypse happen.
Yeah, and that's pretty much, well, I wouldn't say the only totally... effective scene in the movie, but it's one where they clearly focused on it because it's a well done scene and you kind of wonder where was that the rest of the movie.
And and you see when just when he's sitting there with a bomb that's about to detonate, all of a sudden people start reporting in, all the civil defense people, and they're like, who's in charge? And he presses the button. I'm John Connor.
Right. And when this movie ended, that's the only thing I said, which is, where was this director with that? If you had to direct one scene, this is the scene to direct. Mm-hmm. But like, it's when I remember seeing this in the theater, and it's truly remarkably blood chilling. Mm-hmm. Like, it's dark, and the idea that like you literally cannot stop Judgment Day is this great idea. Like, I mean, again, to quote Doctor Who, which we talked about earlier, it's a fixed point in time. The world has to end. This is that moment, and it doesn't matter if you delay it, it's got to happen. And the first two movies have a great minimal score. It's almost John Carpenter-esque. It's very like metallic. This scene is the only scene where the minimal score happens, where there's nothing, and Nick Stoll, who can't act but he can look, doesn't say anything, and he looks around this empty room and realizes this is a place to protect us from nuclear nonsense.
Yeah, so it's total quiet. He and Kate are holding hands as outside them the world burns.
That's a weird place. The movie is not good. The last, like, this is like the third and a half act. The third and a half act is very solid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is almost a short. This is a short film. This is a Twilight Zone episode. You stumble across, like, well, here I am to look at these bomb shelters, and oh no!
Yeah, because General Brewster might have realized this couldn't stop it, so he just gave them the codes to save them.
And it's really a mediocre, like, Atomic Cafe-esque end-of-the-world dungeon. And so, that's where we are.
What it is a Miracle Mile. If anyone's ever seen that, I'm looking at Jeremy here right now. It's about a nuclear war that might not happen, but in the end it does happen.
But that third act is the only thing really worth watching, I'd say. However, because we're here, it's about time we talk about the end of this. Jeremy.
Yeah, it's basically just a remake of the second one, so I would say just watch that instead. Aside from the first car chase and the ending, there was really no point to this.
I'm glad this movie exists, and in the end it explains how Judgment Day happens, but, I mean, the first two movies are great. Check out the Sarah Connor Chronicles if you're really a fan, but this, I don't know, it's a
vestigial arm.
Okay, well, I'm going to be the heretic and contrarian here. I really enjoyed it. The car chase goes on for a little too long, and there are some moments of unintentional hilarity in the dialogue, but it's entertaining. It's pretty cool. So, I mean, I'd say see it at least once. I'm not going to say buy it, but it's fun. I mean, is that why we see movies?
Here's the thing. I'm not torn on it because I think it's particularly good, but I also, like, don't think it's particularly, like, bad. I enjoyed spending time with this movie. I think it's mildly funny. I think it's enjoyable at certain points. And also, it's kind of like a world-class lazy Saturday movie because, like, you don't totally have to pay attention, especially if you've seen the first and the second one, which are really great movies. Mm-hmm. This third one, you just get. You're like, hey, Arnold showed back up. There's loser actors around him. But, like, it's also not particularly good. I'd say if you haven't seen the first two, don't watch this one. If you have, this one's totally, like, a B movie. It's, like, the bad version. It's the Sharknado of other ones. But, however, we are where we are. So, in the meantime, next week is a movie which, luckily, we've already recorded because just thinking about it makes me nauseous. Next week we're doing 2012 because, you know what? We survived 2012, and it's great to look back at what a Dutchman thinks the end of the world looks like. So thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for reviewing. And if you want to hear more of us, tune into our Patreon. But most importantly, thanks.
Myopia Movies is a product of Dude Letter Podcasting and is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Daniel Suttis, mixed and engineered by Nick Hoffman, produced by Nick Hoffman, Matthew Quinn, and Daniel Suttis, and our panelist is Jeremy Reigel. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod and is used under the Creative Commons 4 license. Find it at incomptech.com. Please follow us on Facebook, at Twitter, at Myopia Podcast, on Letterboxd, and rate and review us wherever you find us. Thanks.